Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 300, and we're going to talk about things I no longer carry. That is, a list of things I've talked about on the podcast that no longer come with me. We're also going to talk about one thing every rig should include when it's being built out, and you've probably forgotten it. A product review of a folding two-step stool that just might kill you, and a tale from the road involving frogs, because frogs are nice sometimes. Sometimes they're not. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Thanks for joining me for this epic episode 300. And it's such a momentous occasion that I've decided to do nothing. I just thought we'd just do a normal episode for a change, because I've got so many weird episodes that we might as well just do a normal one, except that it's not that all normal, because I'm doing that time travel thing again. Because you are listening to this, let me pull up the calendar here. If you listen to it when it dropped, you are listening to this on July 8th. And on July 8th, I will be in Iceland. And I recorded this early. In fact, it's only July 1st when I'm recording this. So, welcome to time travel. If there's some momentous event that happens after July 1st, that's why I don't know what it is, because I wasn't there, but I am there now. Something like that. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We are going to talk about things that I no longer bring with me in my rig. So this whole podcast has been an evolution of my experience of van life, and I've shared with you what little expertise I have, what ideas I've had, what the things I've tried and didn't work, etc. This whole thing has been nothing but here's my experience, and maybe it'll help you with yours. And that doesn't end just because I change things. That's part of the evolution. And I warn people who start the show at episode 1 that things are going to change. You know, I will give you advice in episode 10 or whatever that I will disagree with later. That will always happen. It's always going to change. And that's how it should be. And this list is a list of things that I have talked about carrying, that I have carried, that I thought were going to be really great things, but I found that I never use them. And I do the annual empty everything out of the van and put it back in the van thing, except for the things you haven't used in the last year. And, well, these are those things. So I've broken them down into sections. The first one's cooking. Cooking in vans, people get very excited about that. There are channels dedicated just to cooking. That seems to be the favorite part of a whole bunch of different YouTube guys' shticks. You know, it's like, oh, I'm going to do all this, and then I'm going to cook. And anyway, it's fine. It's a good thing. I do still cook in my van. That's not what I'm talking about. There are three things that I do not bring anymore that I have talked about extensively. So the first is a 12-volt kettle. I bought a 12-volt kettle. It is not a terrible idea, but the reason I got the 12-volt kettle was that I was trying to optimize everything in the van for 12-volt, and I wanted an easy way to make hot water without having to use any propane or butane or anything like that. Over time, I have come to accept the fact that inverters aren't all that bad, especially since lithium battery prices have dropped, and it's actually a lot easier to make a pot of water on a butane stove than to use a 12-volt kettle, because they take forever. And they also have a problem where they draw a lot of amperage and damage your cigarette lighter outlets. And because of all those things, I just stopped bringing it with me. So I no longer bring a 12-volt kettle. That's not to say that they're bad things. It's just the way I was doing van life, they just didn't add a lot and they took up space. So out they go. The same is true of the 12-volt oven. I have a classic 12-volt oven, the kind you find at truck stops, and it's not really an oven. It's kind of like a hot lunch box, and it makes things hot. And the idea for this for me was I could put things in there, and they would be hot when I stopped. Like, I could cook in this while I was driving, and then as soon as I stopped, I'd have a hot meal ready. Absolutely will work for that. I have done it. It absolutely works. But I have since found that that is not the boon I thought it was. It's really not that big of a deal for me just to cook something when I get there. And so, yeah, I could use it to heat up soup or, you know, put some burritos in there or something like that. It was a little bit of a microwave substitution. But I never really used it, and it took up a lot of space. So out it goes. And my new thing that I am getting rid of is propane entirely. Just propane. Now, to be clear, I have a propane bottle in my Airstream. I have a propane bottle in my truck camper. Those are staying. They're built into the system. I'm not trying to change those. This is for my main rig, which I will be traveling in most of the time, which is this truck cap thing. No propane. I put propane in it originally, and it takes up too much space, and I just don't want to have to build a locker, and I don't want to deal with it, and I really don't have to anymore. Again, electricity is much cheaper in vans now. I am keeping the butane stove. The butane stove is cheap and easy and so flexible that that's staying. So I will be cooking with gas, as they say, but also be cooking with electric. I have an induction cooktop that I will be using as well. So those are things I do not have anymore. As for sleeping, I originally had this idea that I didn't want to have to sleep in a sleeping bag. I wanted a real bed, you know, with sheets and blankets and pillows and all that. And I brought all that stuff, but in all of the rigs I've had, the exception of the Airstream and the truck camper, let's put them aside for now, I had to take the bed down. Even in the ambulance, which was the largest rig I've had, that wasn't those other things, I had to fold the bed, and that meant that I had to turn the bed into a chair, and that meant that with sheets and blankets, it was just so much work, it wasn't worth it. And this is a disappointment to me, because I much prefer sleeping in sheets and a blanket than in a sleeping bag, but it's just not that practical, and I have now accepted that. So I don't bring sheets anymore. I still bring blankets just for extra blankets, and I do use a sleeping bag, and it is just actually a lot more convenient, and I've gotten used to it. It's not my favorite experience, but it's fine, and it allows me to save the space of having a dedicated bed. While I do think a dedicated bed is wonderful if you can manage it, I am not going to be able to manage it in my truck cap. It would just take up too much space. So out go the sheets, and in goes the sleeping bag that, honestly, I always carried with me anyway, because it's a big blanket, if nothing else. As for electronics, here are the electronics I no longer carry with me. The first is a little surprising to me, and it's Alexa. Now, I used to bring Alexa with me everywhere. I loved Alexa, and I still do. I have, actually, in the office I'm in right now, I have two Alexa devices on my desk, and I have I have lots of Alexa at home. But I found that in the van, it wasn't as useful because of the connection problem. It needs a steady state connection. It needs to always be connected. And since I was primarily using my phone for internet, having to always figure that out, just, it wasn't worth it. All the convenience went away. So I wasn't using it, I took it out. And that's actually true of Alexa Auto as well. And I had just talked about Alexa Auto, and this, to be clear, is an Alexa built for your car or van or truck that plugs into the cigarette lighter, and then that's it. It works, and it just connects to your phone, and it works much better than all the others. But with the advent of AI apps being built in to CarPlay, Alexa has much less use than it used to, because I can just use my phone, and having all this extra stuff is a pain. Also, I found that it messed with the volume of my system, which is a problem with CarPlay. You have all these different volume settings, and they're not obvious, and there's no control panel for them. And Alexa would alter them and put them in a state of like half volume that I couldn't get out of. So anyway, I still like Alexa. I still have it in the house, but it doesn't really have a place in my van life anymore. Next one is a television, which honestly, I haven't had a television in my rig. Wow. What was the last rig? My first two campers had televisions in them. And I don't have a TV. There's a couple in my Airstream. We only ever use one of them. But there isn't one in my Tiki Bago, and there isn't one in the truck camper. And you don't need it. It's just a big screen that takes up space. An iPad does everything I need for media consumption when it's just me. And a little projector, I think, would make a lot more sense than a TV for other things. So no TV for me. If there was one in there, I would probably leave it. What I might put in is a monitor, because my new rig is being set up as kind of like a rolling office, and I might put a monitor in there, which I would use, a big monitor, that, sure, I could use that as a TV if I wanted to, but I don't know that I ever would. I'm disappointed at this one. I no longer bring the shortwave radio. I mean, I might. It's tiny. But I bought the shortwave radio a couple of years ago because I wanted to be able to listen to the radio wherever I was, no matter what. And the truth is that shortwave radio is kind of dying. All the stations are gone. And once a BBC World News, is that what it was called? BBC World Service, that's what it was called, went off the air, there's really just weird, cranky stuff on there. It's like, you know, some dude has a radio in his basement and is talking about how he's the new Jesus or something. It can be interesting, but it's just not useful. It does have weather radio in it, which is good, but it's not good enough to bring a separate device for. And weather radio is built into the next item on the list, which is the CB. Now, I had a CB, and I took it out, and I am going to put it back. I just haven't done it yet. But that is not for much. CBs have gone the way of shortwave, where even truckers don't really use CB that much anymore. They used to have them on all the time. They'd be talking all the time. It was how they passed the time and got information. But those days are gone. With the advent of smartphones and GPSs and all these other things, truckers will have a CB, but they won't even turn it on. They will turn it on if there's a reason, like they're approaching a depot that you communicate over CB, or there's an accident, which is the reason I still want one, and they can talk to the other truckers about what lane to get in and stuff like that. And so that's the reason I am going to put the CB back. But it's not something I really recommend to people anymore, because it's a kind of a pain-in-the-butt installation, and it's not that useful. However, my CB radio also has weather radio, which can be useful if you don't have any type of internet connection. So that's another reason to put it in. But no, not on my list of things I must have. And the last electronics thing is a dedicated GPS. My phone does it all, and I prefer it. I have a few portable GPSs, and I used to bring them, but I haven't turned one of them on in years now. And the argument that, you know, if you have an old one, just throw it in the glove box. It's a good thing to bring just in case, you know, you lose your phone or something. Yes, I think that makes sense, and I may end up doing that. But right now, it's not on my list of things that I need because, again, I just never used it. And as far as navigation goes, the other thing I don't bring anymore, and I feel bad about this, but it's paper maps. I used to have a big map book, a big world atlas that I always brought with me, and then I had a collection of maps that I picked up at service centers around the country, and I just haven't used them in so long that I just don't think I need them. I do think maps are a great idea, especially for people who aren't familiar with maps. Looking at your route plotted out on a map is a super, super useful thing. But what I've found is that I've been doing that on my big monitor at home, and that gives me a good enough idea that I don't actually need the paper map. I'm not saying I will never carry one again, and heck, I might use one for decoration because I've got this big flat wall at the front of the cap that I might just put a big map up there. That would actually make sense. But as far as using them for navigation and for planning, honestly, I can do it all on the phone or the iPad or whatever electronic screen I have. Another thing that I brought that I thought I would use all the time is a fishing rod. I have a portable fishing rod, just a little thing with some lures and some hooks and, you know, it'd be perfect for just whipping it out and going fishing for the afternoon or whatever. The problem with it isn't the fishing, it's the licensing. Fishing rods are like guns in the U.S., where every jurisdiction has their own rules and you basically need a license every time you change states. And since I'm always traveling to different states, it would just be a real pain in the butt to stay legal with that. And yeah, what are the chances I'm going to run into a game warden, you know, that one time I fished in Idaho or whatever? Not very much, but just that idea is enough to stop me from doing it. And So again, I didn't use it, so I took it out. I could conceive putting it back in for a specific trip, but it is not an everyday carry, as they say. And the last thing, and this is somewhat controversial, but I don't care. And it's not something that it's not something portable. It's a permanent part of the rig, and that is insulation. And I just don't care about it as much as I used to. First van I had was heavily insulated. The ambulance was lightly insulated, not by me, but by the manufacturers of the van. They basically covered the walls with Reflectix, and that was it. First off, that was fine. I never had a problem with insulation in the ambulance with just Reflectix on the metal walls, and I know that's not how you're supposed to use it, but it was fine, which is kind of illustrating my point. In the cap, which is heavy-duty fiberglass, I may insulate the roof, but that's going to be about it. I don't think I'm going to spend any time insulating anything else. The floor is a special case with this because it's going to be sitting on 1-inch thick rubber mats, and that's going to act as insulation. And the walls are almost entirely doors, so I'm just not going to do it. And why am I not concerned about this? Because the kind of travel I do is either in the winter or the summer, and insulation is a problem in the summer. Insulation gets in the way in the summer. Unless you're going to keep your rig air-conditioned 100% of the time, heat will get in there, and the insulation will keep it in there even at night after it cools off. And this is the problem I ran into with my NV200 all the time. It was so heavily insulated that I'd be in there at 10 o'clock at night, and it would be 85 in the van, but only 75 outside. And it took forever for that to equalize. Yes, I could have compensated for that with more ventilation, but I added as much as I could, and I had limited roof space because of the solar. So my new solution is I am not worried about it. And if it's cold, it doesn't matter because the diesel heater will overpower anything. That little tiny 2-kilowatt diesel heater makes so much heat that I can be warm in back even at 0 degrees Fahrenheit with no problem. And for those of you who think I'm crazy, try it. It's how it works. If you're camping in the summer and it's cooler at night than it is during the day, insulation's a problem. And for those of you who camp like go skiing and you're going to live in your rig in the winter for weeks at a time, yeah, sure, insulation makes a lot of sense there. But if you're one of these people that does summer and winter and you don't have full-time air conditioning, yeah, I'm sticking with the idea that insulation's not important because that's my experience of it. I've never been in an uninsulated rig and thought, boy, I wish I had more insulation. Past the point it's stopping condensation. You need a little bit to stop condensation. But anyway, talk too much about it. But yeah, those are the things that I no longer bring with me. And all those things were on my list when I first started van life. And I thought, I have to have these things. And it turns out I don't. Tech Talk. What is the one thing every rig should include that most people forget? Well, there's a lot of things on that list, but the thing that comes to mind the most, and the thing that I am now focused on the most, having built out a few rigs, is empty space. Nothing. A space with nothing in it. In my NV200, that was a pretty big problem because it was such a small van. And after I had completely built the thing out, I realized that I had forgot to put a space for dirty laundry. That's apparently a very common thing that people forget to account for. And I solved it by having the clean laundry and dirty laundry take up the same space. I built a barrier that could move. So basically the closet or cabinet became a hamper as time moved on during the week or whatever. And I would sometimes go and buy something on the road, like, you know, I'd be in Colorado and I wanted to bring back some Colorado souvenirs. I had no place to put them. It was annoying. I ended up having bags that would sit on the bed or chair, depending on what mode it was in, and then I'd have to shift them around, and I had a suitcase that would sit in the back, and then it would go in the driver's seat, and yeah. So now I'm going to plan on having free space somewhere. There's going to be a shelf or something that's going to have nothing in it. And I think that is a good way to build a rig. Just the, I don't know what's going in here, but something will space. You could always use it for something. There's no such thing as, you know, oh no, I've got this empty space. I must put something in it. You will. It will. Empty space fills itself. That will not be a problem. But building a rig where every last inch of space is accounted for is bad because there's going to be something else. So in my cap, it's a little tricky. I have one side of it is a big long table that goes the whole length of the thing. It's almost 8 feet long. And it has a hinge on it that folds over, and that becomes the platform for the bed. So I can't do too much with that. It's nice to have this giant table. I mean, that's going to be wonderful. But I can't do much in the way of storage. I can store a few things under it. And then on the other side, I have two shelves that go, well, they go like 6 feet of the 8 feet. And the microwave has to go there, and the sink has to go there, so a lot of that's going to be taken up. So I haven't quite figured out exactly where this empty space is going to be. But this cap takes up the entirety of the truck bed. I won't be able to put anything at all in the truck bed. So there has to be extra space there. And yeah, I might put some Molly boards in the back or something so I can tie stuff there. But I really, really, really don't want to have that cramped feeling anymore. So consider that if you're building out a rig, consider leaving some space. And if you're building a van with a traditional garage area under a bed, that's not too hard. But if you're in a minivan or something smaller, it can be pretty difficult. So just give it some thought and consider what you're going to do if you, like, get a Christmas present that you need to deliver to somebody or something like that. Product review. So last week I talked about folding plastic stools that break and stuff, and yeah, and I told you I bought another one, and it turns out I actually bought it on Amazon. I'd forgotten that. I was just looking at getting some last-minute stuff on Amazon, and it popped up, and I was like, okay, sure, add it to the cart. So let me give you a full review of this thing, because you might be tempted by it, and it's not terrible, but it is not good. So this is the Korpai, K-O-R-P-A-I, folding two-step stool. And it is pretty much what it sounds like. So you have seen the plastic folding one-step stools. They're pretty common. They fold flat, and they're a good thing to have in some cases, but they do tend to break over time. And if you're standing on something and it breaks, that's never a good thing, okay? This is the same thing, except it's two steps. So for me, the purpose was to be able to step up onto the tailgate of my truck and walk into the truck camper. If you have a van, it would have to be a pretty tall van for this to make sense. But you might have one of those. Yeah, it's possible. Or maybe you might have a truck camper or something similar that was tall. Now this thing was $31, which is a little high, I think. And it does fold flat nicely. I will give it that. It's not too hard to set up. You basically just kind of shake it and it gets into place. And the steps themselves fold down on this frame that folds out. But they don't lock into place. They fit into a groove, but they don't really lock in the way that I feel like they should. And my experience with this thing was that I could never make it stable. Now, it's rated for a maximum weight of 250 pounds. I do weigh less than that, so that was supposedly okay. But people were watching me use this thing and commenting, "You're going to break your leg on that thing." Because as you stood on it, it would flex and shimmy, and it felt like it needed to be locked in somehow, and there just wasn't a way to lock it in. And I realized what the problem was. Even though in the description it says that this is a good step stool for kitchens, bedrooms, office, bathroom, and RV, it is designed to sit on a completely flat, hard surface. So if you had a campground where you were on an RV pad that was concrete, this might work a lot better. But that is not normal for me. You know, I'm out there boondocking. I generally have dirt, maybe grass, but it's hardly ever a hard surface. And because this thing has like six legs, if those legs aren't all on the same exact level, it becomes unstable. And that's what I ran into. So I can't recommend this, honestly. If you're looking for a folding stool and you're somebody who almost always camps on a hard surface, basically, it might work out for you. But I would recommend you get a different one that is not designed like this, one that isn't plastic and simple. There are a bunch of other ones. Honestly, Vivor has a metal one that holds 330 pounds that looks much better, and it's only $27.99, so I probably should have gotten that. And then there's a more expensive one by a company called BeNeat, B-E-E-N-E-A-T, that is actually, it's much more expensive. It's $89, but the design looks a little bit better. Anyway, these plastic stools, the one-level and two-level ones, are cheap, and they fold flat, and you'd think, I'll just throw it in there, because every single one of them I've had now has broken. I mean, this one hasn't broken yet. I'm just waiting. But I had two other ones that both broke after repeated use, once in the cold and once just because it felt like it. I can't think of a reason why it should have broken. So be careful with these stools. You know what? This is going to be a dual product review because I have another one that I like better. So I'll put links to both of these in the show notes. But this one that I have that I like better, the company's name is Joka Auto. J-O-C Auto. So Jock Auto? Maybe just Jock Auto. Okay. It's a rectangle of metal with a handle on it, kind of like a briefcase. And these metal legs fold out of it, and they're adjustable. They have the pins and holes, and you can slide them up and down. That means you can adjust the height of the whole thing, but you can also adjust for the terrain to some extent. I have one of these. We've been using it to get in and out of the Tiki Bago, and it is great. It is very, very stable. And I heard other people talking at RMSS that this is the one they prefer as well. So it's only $26. It's not like it costs more. It doesn't get as high as this two-step one, but again, I don't think most people need that. So this one will take up more space in your rig than the folding plastic one, but it will be much, much more secure, and you're probably going to save yourself from twisting an ankle at the very least, and that's worth a lot. So I think this is a better solution for people who need a folding stool, and if you need a two-step stool, take a look at things that are actually made for kitchens but have only four legs, because four legs is going to be more stable than six on uneven ground, and you can actually, you know, put something under one leg or something to make it more stable. But stability matters for these kind of things. You are going to be stepping out of this thing at night. Maybe there's going to be a dog pulling you or whatever. Take the time to make sure you have a stable solution here, and don't do what I did. Don't buy those plastic ones, because eventually you're going to get hurt. Tales from the road. So Jen, my wife, and I have been watching the TV series Alone. It's a reality show where they basically take 10 people and toss them out in the woods and say, good luck! And, the last one who leaves wins. That's basically the whole show. And as far as reality shows go, it's pretty authentic. You know, there's some rules and stuff, and they have GPSs and radios. If they get in trouble, they can get evacuated. But, basically, that's it. They're out there with just a few things, like an axe and some tarps, and that's it. And they're living on their own. And it makes me think back to the time when I did this, and having done this, and I'll tell you what this is in a second, it makes me feel better about all of van life. So back in when I was in Boy Scouts, I was 14 or so, they had a merit badge in wilderness survival. And you learn all this stuff about, you know, how to make shelter and what's the most important thing, water or food, it's obviously water, what to watch out for, and then what plants you can eat and stuff like that. This is Boy Scout level. It wasn't super extensive, but there was a night that we all had to take just a sleeping bag and a knife. And I think we were allowed a couple of matches, and that's it. And then just head off into the woods and spend the night in the woods. And they picked a site for us. It was on the edge of basically a swamp. It was a lake or a pond, but it was very swampy. And they said, here you go. And they left. We didn't even have radios or anything. We left. Now, if there was a big emergency, somebody could have walked back to the camp. Although we didn't have flashlights, so that would have been interesting. But, anyway, I'm not so sure of the safety of it in retrospect, because we're out there with axes and stuff. But anyway, it was fine. So I built a shelter with a buddy, and my thought was that we're only there overnight, so we don't want to spend a whole lot of time building a shelter. And there was another pair that built this incredible dome structure where they lashed together sticks and made a whole thing. It was beautiful, but to my thinking, we wanted to optimize for the amount of time we were there. And what we did was we found three trees that were fairly small that were right near each other. Very close to each other. They were maybe 8 feet apart with one in the middle. And then we found a log that was a little bit longer, say maybe 9 feet, cut it to size, to cut all the branches off, and we wedged it between the trees where one tree was holding up that main beam against the other trees. And that's what it was. It was our main beam. And then we just gathered hemlock boughs. We chopped off as many hemlock boughs as we could find and then piled them up on the sides. And the reason we did that is that hemlock, which is not the same stuff Socrates drank, this is a fir-like tree that grows all over the place, but it's very common in New Hampshire, is waterproof. And we put it up in such a way that we were completely covered. And yeah, it actually rained that night, and sure enough, we stayed dry. So our shelter worked. It wasn't anything fancy, but it did work. However, I remember sleeping in there and how it wasn't all that comfortable because we had sleeping bags, but we didn't have pillows. And I was a little tall even back then, and not all my body fit entirely in the sleeping bag. And so we basically made a floor of these hemlock boughs, and the needles were breaking off and getting the sleeping bag. So I would spend more time on that. And that's actually part of how I have this idea that sleeping comfort is super important when it comes to van life. Maybe I'm just sensitive. It could be, but I'm going to stick with it. Then it was time to make a meal. So we were allowed to bring whatever we could forage in the forest. And I actually got a couple of sycamore leaves. No, they weren't sycamore. There were some, maybe they were witch hazel. There was some kind of leaf that was thick. And I used the stems from leaves and sewed them together into a little basket. And this wasn't something they taught us. It was just obvious that you could do this. And then I went and gathered raspberries and blueberries, which were thankfully grew in the area, and filled that, the whole thing, with them. So that was part of my meal. But the other thing was frogs. So we're in the swamp, and we didn't have fishing gear, but there were plenty of frogs. And so we had to figure out, how do you kill and cook a frog? Now, we were kids. We had caught frogs before. And however, these guys were smart. These frogs, they would jump in the water as soon as we got near. And so a few of us learned that once they went in the water, you could whack them with sticks. And then we learned something that we totally didn't expect. Frogs don't float when they're dead. They sank. So we killed several frogs, and I'm sorry for the wildlife lovers out there. This was a simulated survival situation, and this wasn't our normal behavior. But yeah, we killed a number of frogs before we realized they wouldn't float. So we figured that out. We needed to kill them in water we could reach, and that was shallow. I actually tried to make a spear out of my knife. And that didn't work. That was a bad idea. And then I actually broke my knife. The blade snapped and fell into the water. And I was like, okay, I am risking losing my knife. This was a stupid thing. But I did get a frog. It was not a bullfrog, which would have been preferred. It was a big leopard frog, a good size one. And we made a fire. That wasn't hard. We all knew how to do that. And then we had to figure out how to cook it. Now, when you get a frog for wilderness survival, you don't eat the whole thing because there's really not much on there except the legs. But the legs are like chicken wings. They're about the same size. But it was interesting cutting the legs off of a frog. And even though it's dead, parts of it are still moving because they're fairly primitive. And then we skinned the legs and put them on a stick and held them over the fire. And as the heat came, the toes all curled up. Yeah, anyway, it was interesting. But in the end, I don't think we cooked them enough because they kind of tasted like fishy chicken. And the texture wasn't all that great. But yeah, we did. We survived the night. And they allowed us fresh water, too. We were allowed to take a canteen, which was smart. But yeah, that was my wilderness survival experience. And that, the fact that I could do that and not die and not absolutely hate every second of it, made me realize that camping was something I liked. I could be comfortable out there in the woods, even if I didn't have a tent or anything. And because of that, knowing that I'm like that, van life is like luxury to me. It isn't roughing it at all. I absolutely do not feel like I'm roughing anything when I'm out there on the road. I mean, yeah, I would like to have a big shower sometimes, you know, but other than that, I can cook and sleep and watch TV and do all the things I do at home in comfort. It's my happy place. A place to visit. Chicago is a town with a whole lot of things to visit. So you've heard of the Art Institute and the other amazing museums and Navy Pier, where locals never go, truth be told. And you know about the deep dish pizza, which most locals only do when there's tourists in town. You've heard all that stuff. But have you heard of Woolly Mammoth? Woolly Mammoth is one of my favorite shops in the world. In fact, if I need to buy a present for somebody, I will go there. And Woolly Mammoth it's an oddities shop. In fact, if the TV show Oddities, if you remember that show, it's probably 10 years gone now, or even longer than that, they actually went to Woolly Mammoth because it's that interesting. It is a shop that is filled with just weird stuff, all of it vintage, everything from an anomalous fetal skeleton in a jar to a massive King Kong head and arm from some kind of a movie display. They had ancient Rorschach tests that you could buy in frame. Just all kinds of very, very strange taxidermy. They had a jar of teeth that a dentist collected and somehow they got a hold of. It was like all these teeth he'd pulled from his patients over the years sitting there in the jar, and you can buy the teeth in bulk if you want, or you can just buy one. You can make something out of it. They had mourning jewelry. It's not all gross, creepy stuff. It's just all interesting in some way. And back when I was working with Atlas Obscura, I got to know the owners pretty well, and they're super nice, honest, generous people who are simply curious folks, and they like this stuff. They seem to be doing okay money-wise because the store has been open forever, and Chicago is not an easy market. They survived COVID just fine. And I remember when I was having an event with Atlas Obscura, I asked them to come and like be a vendor, and I was like, hey, you can come and sell stuff. And they didn't want to. Not because they didn't want to be at the event, but because they wanted to be at the event so much, they didn't want to waste time selling stuff because they thought they'd miss the event. I thought that was very cool. I actually was a little sad because I wanted them to sell stuff, but they are curious folks. So if you are in Chicago, I highly encourage you to visit Woolly Mammoth. It's like a tourist attraction, and it is fairly well known now nationwide. It is at 1513 West Foster Ave, which is in the Andersonville neighborhood, which is one of Chicago's premier interesting neighborhoods. And check them out! Their website is woollymammothchicago.com. I'll have a link in the show notes because Woolly has two O's and two L's, which is often forgotten. And yes, no visit to Chicago is complete without a visit to Woolly Mammoth, in my opinion, which some people don't share, but they should. Resource recommendation. So I've been paying a lot more attention to where the sun is and where it comes up and goes down in relation to where I park my rig. So at Rocky Mountain Star Stair, you know, I'm parking my rig for a few days, and the weather at that altitude and at that latitude and at that time of year is cool to cold nights, you know, in the 40s, and then during the day it gets very hot, you know, high 80s maybe. And the way your rig is parked matters. And so what I have learned to do is to park my rig with the nose facing north. That way the sun comes up at the east and lights up the sliding door side of my van, if that's the vehicle I'm in the morning when I want the heat. But then in the afternoon, that sun is shining on the enclosed part of the van, where it's doing the least damage to my calm, my cool. And that works pretty well. But it's actually better to know not where north is, but to know where the sun rises and sun sets, like exactly. Because over the course of the year, obviously that moves. That's why we have seasons. And I found an app. It's actually just a simple website that will calculate that for you. All you have to do is give it the address you're at, and it comes up with this graphical display overlaid on the map. so you can see here's where the sun comes up and here's where the sun comes down. You don't have to do any calculating or figuring or, well, it's going to be at 110 degrees east. You can do that. It's not that hard. But this is just a one-stop shop to just see it visually. And that is suncalc.org. It's just a website. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to download anything. As long as you have an internet connection, you can go to suncalc.org and set the date. If you don't want to do today, if you're planning, you can set the date and then give it a location. Give it an address and it will show you overlaid on a map where the sun is going to come up, where the sun is going to set, and also where the sun is at the time that you specify. And it's an interesting thing just from a scientific point of view, but it's actually useful for learning where you want to mount your rig, because that matters a lot. If you have the sun setting on a summer's day and that sun's coming underneath your awning and heating up your rig even more, that's miserable. And it would be best to know where you're going to be before you set up. So this is just another little tool that you can know about that will help you figure out where to park your rig. So that is suncalc.org. It's also useful for determining sunset and sunrise, which is important. And, well, here's a fun thing. So I'm in Iceland right now, except that I'm not really. But I'm going to type in Reykjavik, and I'm going to type in today's date. That is not today's date. And I'm going to put in, let's say, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Okay, and then, it's pretty funny, because so the sun rises in the east and the sun sets in the west, right? Yeah, not in Iceland. The sun rises in north by northeast and sets in north by northwest. It's this little tiny arc of maybe 15 degrees, and it's because sunset is at 11:43 at night and sunrise is at 3:20 a.m. They don't call it the land of the midnight sun for nothing. And this is in July. I mean, the days are getting shorter as we proceed down the year here. Back on June 21st, it would have been almost completely dark all the time. Well, folks, thank you for listening to the first episode of Season 4, which is just numbers. Doesn't really mean a lot. Music, as always, is by Simon Wagg. If you need to get a hold of me for any reason, I am jeff@builttogo.com. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. Until next time, remember the words of Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, which I'm probably pronouncing wrong. Perfection is achieved not when there is nothing more to add, but when there is nothing left to take away.